Welcome to the Land Jam Podcast, a semi-friendly discussion between two blokes on watches, cars, and everything in between. Now, here are your hosts, Tommy and Sanjeev.
Welcome to the Land Jam Podcast, episode 46, Seikomania. Oh boy.
I know, Sanj. I'm sorry. I know this is not something you wanted to cover. Or is it? Or are you just, you know, playing hard to get with me? I'm not even sure anymore.
Oh, completely hard to get with you.
Okay, so this is somewhat interesting or exciting for you, I hope.
The many few episodes, it's just you that's the problem. Nothing wrong with Seiko.
I see. Well, as long as we're being honest, I guess that's helpful.
Full transparency, you know.
Yeah, I guess that's something. Today's release is actually something that blew up the internet for a solid week, and I feel like anything that happens these days barely has like 2 or 3 days before something else dominates but people's mind share. But this was, of course, the Seiko 5 GMT releases. So I walk us through it, Sanj. What is this release all about?
Yeah, so as you were mentioning, Tommy, this was completely out of the blue. So Seiko, you know, they have their 5KX line, right? Their sports dive-oriented watch, which is a successor to, let's say, the SKX. But it was remarketed for more for streetwear than for actual professional diving.
Right.
And, you know,
and a lot of people give a lot of negative feedback to that. That the SKX was a lot more capable, and this is BS, and you need to stop doing this. So, I feel like you and I also kind of said something along those lines. I'd have to recollect, but I was kind of disappointed that it wasn't a professional diver.
I'm perfectly fine with it not being a professional diver, actually.
I had a problem with it.
Yeah, but you have the prospects line for that, right? I think they're just trying to differentiate. This is like their entry level watch.
This is their entry level fashion line, I guess.
It's 100 meters water resistant. I mean, what's wrong with that?
All right. Okay. All right.
You don't go more than 10 centimeters below depth.
But, right? you say this, but, you know, I got to emphasize 100 meters doesn't actually just mean 100 meters, right? It's a certain amount of force that we're talking about, right? So,
yeah, no, for sure. For sure. But, like,
you know, you can definitely bang up a watch 100 meters less than 100 meters.
When was the last time you went swimming with a watch?
It's been a while. Okay.
When was the last time you went swimming in general? When was the last time you went?
I was in Mexico the month before COVID started.
So 2 years ago.
Over two years. Son of a gun.
So any of your watches that touched water is over.
Well, I have washed my hands since then. So I don't know if that counts. Except for the Speedy. I will never take that by water over my dead body.
Yeah. I hope it wasn't the Speedy that you're washing your hands with.
No, it wasn't.
So, to me, I think they did tasteful upgrade. I have an SKX, and great watch and everything, great beater watch, but, you know, the movement could use a bit more accuracy.
Yeah, I mean, none of those watches come out regulated, right? The mass-produced Seikos, like, you're actually, from what I've heard, like, you should go to the store and get it regulated, and then you have a very accurate watch.
For a brief amount of time, I actually had my Seiko having issues with accuracy because I guess I kept it by some magnetic interfering region, like, you know, near the microwave.
Genius.
It demagnetized itself and it runs perfectly fine. But going back to the 5KX, you know, like, I'm perfectly fine. You know, they have different styles and different colorways that you can go for.
Yeah. So yeah, no, they're attractive watches. Not at all. And to use that as the basis for the GMT line is really pretty smart on Seiko's part.
I 100%. It's never came with the GMT line, you know? So at this price point, for it to come with a GMT is very attractive.
What's the price point?
It's around $500. It's, you know, 470 euro. So basically, let's just say 500 retail.
I mean, I got to challenge anyone out there to find a automatic GMT for about $500. It's actually pretty difficult.
It's incredibly difficult. I think the only way you can get it at that price point is to go quartz.
Yeah.
So going back to the 5KX GMT, so the reference numbers are the 003 and 005. And
Okay.
yeah, so it is coming in three different colorways and configurations. So the 001 is the black dial, black and gray bezel insert.
Yeah.
The 003 is the blue dial, black and blue insert. And the 005 is the orange dial bezel.
Got it.
So, three completely, different colorways in a sense, but they all do the same function. The rest of the watch is more or less the same. I think this even the case, Seiko tried to keep it within the original 5KX as much as possible.
Which is very smart, right? It keeps the expenses down. You've got a kind of unity in design across the
Yeah.
line. It's a
I
very
believe
smart
the
move.
thickness is only 0.1 millimeters or something really small, thicker than normal.
Oh, really? Okay,
Yeah,
got it.
but it's completely negligible.
Yeah.
And the movement that they're using is called a 41 hour power reserve.
The
So
4R34. Okay.
yes. And you know what? I really dig this combination going here, Like if I was looking for my first watch, this would be my first watch possibly,
So this is not a traveler's GMT, right? This is not your flying GMT. It's not the Tudor style GMT where, you set both the GMT hand and the local hand to the right time, the same hour. You land in a new country or another place. You change your local hand, your local hour hand, but the GMT hand stays the same, so you track two time zones. That's not how this works. This is basically an independently moving GMT hand, right? So like
I
you kind of
believe
set
so,
it yourself.
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think some enthusiasts will kind of look down their nose on that. Practically speaking, how often do
500
anyone
bucks,
use GMT? Exactly. And for $500, who can possibly complain? I really think that's kind of silly. But
Yes. So,
that's a distinction that people should know.
yeah. So I think the key differences from visual effects from the 5KX line is that the bezel has been switched over to a 24-hour bezel instead of like a dive bezel.
Got it.
And you have a red GMT hand on the blue and the black dial versions and a black GMT hand on the orange dial.
And interestingly enough, they didn't do an AM PM, which is like a Rolex GMT style, which I would anticipate Seiko doing someday in the future because it's kind of too good of an opportunity to pass up.
What do you mean by an AM/PM? Sorry.
Like a red and blue, or
Oh,
two the bezel having two different colors for AM and PM.
they do. So, like, I believe the 01 has the black and gray.
Black and
And
gray.
then the 03 has the black and blue, kind of like the Batman style.
See, I'm looking at the monochrome pictures. I'm not seeing that.
So.
Is that just really, really subtle? Am I not seeing that?
Yeah, so
Oh, yeah, I do see that.
it's
Holy
very,
mackerel.
very subtle.
That is really, really subtle. Okay. I gotta say, the black and even though I couldn't see it, now that I can somewhat notice it, it is pretty attractive, the black and gray. I like that a lot.
That would be my pick. I mean, normally I hork on you for picking monochromatic style watches, but to me, the black and gray is the most form-fitting
Yeah.
and well blended, even though it's easy with the monochromatic scale.
I mean, I've got to say, it's very, very difficult to see. I mean, I'm looking at it straight up in photos, and I can barely see it. So I'm really curious what that looks like in person. I'm gonna have to go into a store and check it
Yeah, exactly. I think that's
out.
the only way to capture this,
Yeah,
to see
like
which
it
one's
doesn't
what.
photograph well. Like it really doesn't pop. It's just too close of a color.
Correct.
But interesting. Okay. So, I mean, what are your thoughts here, Sant? I mean, a lot of people. Oh, by the way, there's a Cyclops as well at three
Oh, right,
o'clock. So,
yes, there is a
yeah,
Cyclops eye. I mean,
interesting. That's wait. Are you pro Cyclops or anti Cyclops? I'm not even sure anymore.
you know what? The problem is the common, thing, correlation and connection to role
Yeah.
there. And that's what is always something I have in the back of my mind. It's like when I look at these watches, I'm like, oh, it's got a Cyclops eye, Rolex.
Yeah, you don't want to be imitating, or you don't want people to think you're imitating.
Yeah, exactly. So there's the Squale. I think there is the they have a series. I think the Squale at most 30 Ceramica GMT, which is also attractive. But if you look at it, it's you just can't think help but think that that also has some Rolex vibes to it. The GMT Master.
Oh yeah, I mean this. I mean with the Jubilee bracelet and everything. Yeah, this screams Rolex.
So
yeah. That's tough. I get that.
Yeah, I mean, what would be cool for me?
Actually, I like the gray and red bezeled version of the Squale. It's actually really nice. I'll send you the link later. Sorry, Sanj.
It doesn't bother me too much, to be honest, but I wouldn't mind, I mean, without the Cyclops eye.
Yeah. Okay. Which one would you pick of the three?
Probably the black dial with the gray and black.
Okay.
I think you pick the same.
I might pick the blue, to be honest.
The blue, okay.
Yeah, just to be a bit different. The orange, I just don't get the GMT vibe out of that, so I wouldn't pick it.
Yeah, I don't know. I will, you know,
bezel. Yeah.
Yeah, the orange is a little bit off. To me.
Yeah. To me, it's a bit strange. It's more dive than GMT to me.
Yeah.
Still attractive, but yeah, I don't get the point of that. Okay.
All right. So this is a win.
This is a win. You're on board with this one.
Yes, I'm totally on board. I'm hoping that Seiko takes their movement for the 434 and then, you know, uses it in other of their lines, you know, whether it's the Presage, other areas of the prospects.
Yeah. I mean, in our conversation with Nick De Leon, he was saying the same thing, that he was hoping that they would white label that, like their NH series movements, and give it to third parties so they can start making their own, you know, kinds of watches.
Yeah.
Because there aren't a lot of very solid GMT automatic options out there. You know.
No, and for this price point, it's super killer.
It's amazing. Yeah. So, yeah, I can see why everyone's excited. I think they're very attractive. I mean, I occasionally wear my Tudor GMT, and even I'm looking at this and be like, oh, that's a really nice looking watch. Just very attractive, very well executed. So we'll see what they do. Seiko, I'm sure, will have other releases in the future.
Right. Now, the question is, would you get it in and add it to your collection?
Would I get it? I don't think it's compelling enough for me to get.
Yeah, I would say so too, because I already have an SKX, so
yeah.
Unless they do something completely like a Coke version of it or something like that.
A root beer or something like that. I mean, if there's a really funky colorway, I would consider it. Because there's no way I'm buying a root beer. A real root beer. Yeah, I'd have to mortgage the house. So yeah, I wouldn't do that. But yeah. Yeah, you know, I think it's a win. I think it's a really good win.
So right, on to the next one.
On to the next one. This watch actually is something that I've long talked about that Seiko had to do, that it I was surprised it didn't do. This is of course Seiko's newest three prospects divers, their reissue of the classic Seiko 6105 8000 line, the Skinny Willard, which is the precursor to the Captain Willard. It's a slimmer case. Again, Vietnam War era. Just a beautiful, beautiful watch. Seiko dive collectors know, you know, very, very, very intimately this watch. It's quite popular in the secondhand market. I've got one. So I was always wondering, you know, where is the Seiko re-release for this model? It's a model that people recognize, right? And basically, the only way you could get a reissue is if you went and got like an AliExpress version of this watch. I think Redoune or those companies were you know what I'm talking about, the guys that make the fake 62 Masses.
Right. Yeah.
They also made a version of the Skinny Willard. So I was like, well, you know, they're pretty good. Spencer Klein reviewed it. You know, he was saying that, you know, it has a Seiko movement inside it. It's finished pretty well. Like, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's pretty solid. You know, I was never going to get one. You know, for me, it had to say Seiko on the dial, and Seiko finally did it. They released, you know, in a bombshell to me, basically, three versions of the Skinny Willard, the 313, the 315, and the 317. You know, we'll get into all that. A few things to talk about, right? So, harkening back to that original, you know, Skinny Willard case, this is one of those early Seiko watches that put the crown at four. So, you know, that's where that kind of idea came from. It has a traffic light seconds hand, another iconic Seiko vintage kind of design feature. It measures 41 millimeters in diameter. It's got lug-to-lug measurements of just below 47 millimeters. Interestingly enough, the date has moved to 430, whereas the original had the date at 3. And this is to save that 3 o'clock loom pip. So you have some symmetry in the dial.
Yeah, it's...
I don't know how you feel about that. Some people find the 4:30 date to be really annoying.
No, actually, I think they did a really bang up job with this one here.
Yeah, it's color coded, so it doesn't. You know, they put the right background color for the date window, so it blends in as much as possible. It's just a little punch hole, so it's not a square hole. It's a very round, small punch hole, right at the 4:30. It's done, I think, as subtly as possible. Without messing up the dial. And they saved the 3 o'clock loom pip, which I think is, you know, a great reason to do what they did.
Yeah, I mean, for a functional diver watch, for those who actually do use it for their diving escapades, doing this method is very effective because you add the addition of the 3 o'clock loom, you know, it might be just more helpful underwater.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You've got a cleaner look, you know. So outfitted and on the movement side, it has a 6R35 movement, 3 hertz, 70 hour power reserve. Kind of, you know, I would think it's the Seiko answer to the Powermatic 80. It's, you know, roughly the same kind of movement, same kind of purpose that it fits and where it sits on the line. It's a great movement. It's one step above, you know, their basic prospects movement. It's up there, right? So we just talked about the Seiko 5 GMT. That's 4R. So that's, you know, that's one line below. So, you know, as I mentioned, three versions. They got the 313, which is the white dial, 315, which is the black gilt, and the 317, which is the black dial. The 317 is the original, is basically the Captain Willard, right? It comes in a rubber strap. That's the Vietnam War era classic dive watch. The gilt and black one, to me, reminds me of the Seiko Turtle. I have the SRP 775, so that's very similar. And the white dial is kind of an original look. I kind of like it. I don't know how you feel about it, Sinj.
That's my favorite, I was going to say.
It's like really attractive, right?
Yeah, the 315 is probably my pick of the three.
Yeah. It's very clean. It's like really, really attractive. And because they color coded that date window, it looks even all that much cleaner. I'm a big fan, and they have this 5-link bracelet that the gilt and the white dial come in, which I think is really, really well done. I'm really curious, like, how comfortable that is to wear. It's something akin to a Jubilee.
Yeah, I would totally swap that out just to preserve the bracelet. But yeah, that white dial is so nice.
Yeah. It's really crisp, right? Wait, you don't like the bracelet? Is that not for you?
It's okay. But, I mean...
Interesting.
The Skinny Willard, you know, it makes it more symmetrical, right? And the way everything is laid out is so nicely done that, like, the date window is so subtle.
Yeah.
It makes, to me, to my eyes, extremely attractive. Like,
yeah, it's a beautiful release. Beautiful watch. One thing Spencer Klein mentioned, and he looked at this watch when it was released, was that he noticed in the same article that I'm looking at, in the monochrome pictures, that the 12 o'clock marker on the bezel is misaligned on all three of these watches. Definitely the white dial, possibly the gilt, maybe not the black.
I do see that. It's just like half a degree, but...
It's like a half a degree. It was driving him nuts. Now, you know, Monochrome gets basically the prototypes to take their photos and, you know, write up the review before they're released. So, you know, that could be a prototype issue. But definitely something that if you pick one up, you know, try to pick one up at a store so you know exactly what you're getting. That's a common issue with Seiko dive watches, unfortunately. That, you know, they just don't line up perfectly at 12, which... I think would drive any reasonable person absolutely insane. So That's the Skinny Willard reissue. And I think that's a thumbs up for you, right?
Oh, this is a big thumbs up. This
is a thumbs up for me. Yeah,
this could be the one I would pick out of all the watches we're going to cover today. The
315. Really? Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm actually kind of tempted to get the 317 and just have an original Skinny Willard and the reissue. I think that'd be pretty cool.
The 317 is the gilded? No, it's the black dial.
It's the black with the rubber. Yeah, it's the original, you know, Seiko Diver reissue, one for one, as close as possible.
You know, it's very well put together in terms of design. Yeah. Like, it's meant to serve a purpose, which is for diving purposes, right?
And there's being so thin, I'm really curious how comfortable it is. I mean, it is their thinnest Prospex diver, you know, so I'm really curious to see how thin is thin, you know?
And you have some other decent upgrades over regular, you know, Prospex. You get internal AR coating and a sapphire crystal, not to say how... anything of a concern to have in your watches, but
people love complaining about it, but it's perfectly fine.
It's totally fine, but I think I think sapphire crystal is more expensive than their hard lux. Yeah, so you're getting some upgrades to say their, you know, dive watches.
Yeah.
And it's 120 click bezel.
Yes. I think, you know, the Captain Willard, the 6105 8100 gets a lot of love, and it should. But the 8000 is also, to me, very attractive. And, you know, it has the same pedigree. They were around at the same time. So I'm glad to see Seiko bring something out. And I think once the prices go, you know, become reasonable, once the hype dies down, you know, I might pick one up.
Yeah, we got to keep each other in the loop for this one. I might have to...
Oh, wow. Finally. Oh, wow. Okay. After all the Seiko bashing. Look,
I knew you were going to bring this up. After all the Seiko bashing, that 315, man.
That's what it is. That's what it is. I knew you'd be back. Good to have you back, Sanj. All right.
This is only brief.
I'm hoping this is not a COVID fever. I think for the listeners, they should know you are recovering. So I'm glad it's not the COVID haze that's making you do this. I hope this is for real. All right.
I might still stick with Squale because I really want to get a Squale.
All right, folks, he's recovering. That was a test. The medication's working. All right. Okay, Sanj. All right, what else you got here? We got another Seiko Prospex diver.
Yes. So this one is a big upgrade to the Seiko line of Arnie watches.
Okay.
So this is going to be... kind of like a comparison a little bit to those. I think you have the Safarni, right? So you can talk a bit more in detail the differences directly.
Yeah, tell me.
But Seiko upgraded their, you know, Arnie watches, which are the SNJ 033, 035, and 037. And they've made some couple of key design upgrades and differences to the original Arnie. And I'm going to talk about the little bit of the differences here. So starting with the three different variants. So the SNJ 033 is a black dial stainless steel case. The 035 is the Paddy special, which got hints of blue.
Yeah.
And it's got the Paddy logo. So which is the Professional Association of Divers Institute, I think. That's what it's called.
Yeah, and they have a Paddy release for almost every one of their dive watches. Turtle has one, yeah.
And then the 037 is the special edition of it, version of it. There's only going to be 4,000 pieces releases for this, but this is the PVD-coated steel case and bracelet.
Oh, okay.
So, interestingly, Seiko's releasing all their watches that we talked about here in variants of three, which is... but the key bits to the design changes is that there is now a single crown at 8 and a crown at... There is a single crown at 8. Before, there used to be, you know, a crown, I think, at the 10 o'clock or so.
Yeah, so the... you had pushers... Basically, it was inverse, right? So you had the pushers on the left, and then you had a single crown at 3.
Right, okay. So they swapped it around.
Yeah. Yeah, they swap it around.
The other key bit is that this is the digital display, the LED display.
Yeah.
Put it down to the bottom of the dial where it covers the 6 o'clock position.
Interesting. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually think that is a better, more uniform look of the dial itself. It was a quirk to have it at, let's say, closer to 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
But I think the 6 o'clock is a bit better to my eyes.
I'm just so used to it the other way. I can't be kind of fair on that, right? Because I'm just used to it seeing the other way. If you know, give me a Men in Black light pen and wipe my brain, I might agree with you. But I just can't right now. Yeah.
So the single crown at 8 and the crown at 2 o'clock, they control the digital display and functions.
Yeah.
And the crown at 4 o'clock has this new die feature mode, which
interesting.
I don't know exactly how it works, but it's used to maintain like logs up to 100 dives. And it's got a depth reading of up to 80 meters.
Can read your depth?
I guess so.
Wow. Okay.
Because it's got an LED, you know, backlighting as well with this watch. So I guess you can use And then you have the ability to also have notifications for rapid ascent.
Yeah.
And also the ability to switch temperature and depth units. So extremely multi-versatile dive watch that we have here now.
It's very functional. It is a diver's dive watch. And I think it's aesthetically pleasing. They've also colored the rings, right, around each of the pushers.
Exactly. So I think the ones that control the display are coated in red, and the one feature.
Okay, got it. Mm-hmm.
So really cool idea to kind of add additional features and functionality to a classic, you know, line of the Prospects line.
Yeah, no, I like it a lot. I think the steel case, steel band one is interesting. That's probably the one I would pick. Which one would you pick, Sash?
Well, I would pick the steel case as well, and the steel bracelet as well. I think that one gives it a good contrast with the bezel and the dial.
Yeah.
And the subtle colors of the red.
Yeah.
You know, pretty cool as well. And unique to watch.
Yeah.
Now, the other cool bit is the case size is 1 millimeter smaller now.
Huh. So
it's 46.9 millimeters now. It's still as thick,
which
it has to be, but it's a little bit smaller, so a bit more comfortable to wear. So I'm assuming that's something you would be appreciative of.
Yeah, I mean, I love the Safarni. It's my gym watch. It's the watch I mow the lawn with. It's indestructible. It is big, you know.
Yeah, meanwhile, you know, John Matrix is using it to save his daughter or, you know, kill the predator here.
Yeah, but I feel like it's more important for me to keep track while I'm mowing the lawn. So, yeah. You knew, by the way, for fans of Arnold Schwarzenegger, in the Commando, where he's John Matrix, there's a scene, you know, occasionally he checks the watch because there's a countdown before his, you know, someone hurts his daughter, right? The actual dial that they show is a mock-up. Did you know that? It's not it's not the Arnie dial. It's actually a movie prop. I have no idea why. I guess they just wanted to make it even clearer, the countdown, as if whoever was watching the movie was too dumb to read the Arnie.
I don't think anyone cared apart from you and I about
this. Well, I mean, it's kind of off-putting. But, I mean, just to think about the effort that went into making that change, like, they must have really felt strong, right? It's like a digital watch. Like how simpler do you need it to be, you know, to have a countdown? It doesn't make any sense to me, but apparently they felt it was necessary. So that's that.
But yeah, I think it's a very attractive, I think it might be my favorite version of the Arnie right after the Sop Arnie.
Interesting. You didn't like the original Arnie.
I don't mind it. I think this one just takes it a little bit more. It's just a little bit better to my eyes.
Okay, got it. better. I mean, I still prefer the original and the copper bezeled one, or the bronze bezel one. If you remember that one, it was a limited edition, which I thought was really attractive. And the Safarni. This one is okay. I find it to be a bit more plasticky. Excuse my dog in the background. So, you know, that's kind of the look is not really up my alley.
Right.
But, you know, to each his own.
Yeah, no, it's... I think it's a welcome change, you know? The Seiko put a lot of thought into what can we do to keep the essence of the Arni, but make great improvements to the watch.
I don't care for it and never want to talk about it again.
Okay, then.
All right.
So this is a 50-50 for you.
This is a 50-50 for me. Last watch of the day. Okay, last new release.
This is the one you've been...
I've been itching to talk about
this is the...
because...
Yes, yeah, you've been itching so badly.
This is the Seiko Speed Timer. This is the new Speed Timer lineup. It's been out a few months. We didn't cover it at release. We had to talk about it because it's the Speed Timer moniker, right? This is a Seiko iconic subline that was basically kicked off their 6139 automatic chronograph series. Then it went to the 7828 quartz chronos of the 80s, and now they've resurrected it again one more time for the solar quartz. It's got, you know, basically it's built around this quartz V192 solar movement. So, you know, this is it's a bulletproof movement, 6 months of power at full charge, accurate to plus or minus 15 seconds per month. I mean, this is great. And what they did was they put these movements into a 39 millimeter case, 13.3 millimeter case height. I had the pleasure of trying this watch on recently, and I can tell you, it wears a lot smaller than you expect it to wear. It's actually like a really, really nice vintage-sized watch.
I'm surprised you didn't walk out of the store with one.
I know. It was really tempting. So, you know, it came in a number of colorways. You know, my favorite is the blue one. The blue dial with red markings on the bezel, black bezel. To me, that reminds me of the blue 6139s that Seiko had back in the day. And it's like a one-for-one almost, you know, update to that watch, which I just love. And a few things to talk about. You know, the subdials are translucent cells, so that's where the solar power comes in. It's actually the subdials on the dial. And the bottom subdial has an F and an E to spell out the remaining power in the battery. There's a built-in power reserve.
Oh,
you engage the chronograph, it snaps to 12 and then performs as a chronograph hand. But the same hand is also the power reserve, which I thought was very smart because it doesn't clutter your dial with an extra thing, right? It's multifunctional.
It's my number one complaint on the Grand Seikos, that power reserve.
Yeah, and I don't blame you. I find it to be kind of off-putting. But here they've got one hand do two things, which I think is really, really cool. And as I mentioned, four different colorways, the Panda dial, which is the hottest one. I went to a watchmaker recently in Boston. He was saying that he has sold dozens of these, dozens of the Panda. I mean, there's a waiting list now for the next shipment before the shipments even arrived. People have just gone nuts. There's also the all black dial, which for me really didn't find all that engaging because the black with the blue, the subdials of the solar cell, it looked like it was a black dial with bluish or purplish subdials. And I found that to be kind of weird. As far as the other two color lines, I think those are my favorite. There's a yellow or sand version, which I thought was really attractive. It's got like a matte finish. And then of course the blue one with the red bezel accents, which I think is my favorite. So they're selling for $675 retail, which is really, really not that bad. It has a clean sweeping chronograph hand, so it's as close as you can get to a mechanical chronograph without having a mechanical chronograph. And all in all, I it's a very, very beautiful, well-executed watch. I think the only drawback to this, I can say, is the bracelet was just not very comfortable or really didn't add anything to the watch. And I think they chose it to keep price down. You know, that's where they kind of cut the corner. So if you pick this one up, you know, put it on something aftermarket, I know Uncle Seiko might be working on a full blown bracelet for this, so keep an eye open for that. So that's the only drawback that I would say, you know, in this whole offering. I think beyond that, it's a great take on a classic chronograph coming back for one more time.
So I'm on the fence with this watch.
Why is that?
I don't know, man. It just doesn't speak to me.
It's very strange because it's very motorsport inspired. It's, I think, very attractive. It's symmetrical. I don't know what your bone to pick with this one is.
I'm trying to find a bone to pick with. It doesn't speak to me. I think the black and white dial is the one to pick for sure. But
the Panda. Well, I mean, everyone loves the Panda, right?
Yeah.
So I won't argue with that. Okay. I mean,
the blue dial doesn't work on me, for me personally.
The blue doesn't. Interesting. What about the sand?
The sand, I have to take a look at it, but I think it's well sized. That's for sure. 39 millimeters.
It's so well sized. I think that, you know, they really could have done something really stupid here and made it a big watch, and they chose not to do that. They really restrained themselves, which, you know, I got to give them credit. And the sand, by the way, is the SBDL089.
I think the sand is also better. I actually do like the sand.
Yeah, it's really attractive, and Amazon has it for $443. So, you know, prices have really come down. So
if I were to go on the limb, actually, I would probably pick the sand over the Panda.
Yeah, I see what I mean. I think the sand is really, really attractive. It brings something really different to the table.
And for $400, yeah, you know what? You're getting a great watch for sure.
Great watch. I think it's fantastic. And look, you know, if you don't tell anyone that it's a quartz, you're really gonna have a tough time figuring that out.
Yeah.
You know, I think the second subdial ticks, but the actual sweep of the chronograph hand is smooth. So, you know, you really wouldn't know unless someone told you. And I, you know, that's the future, I guess. You know, it's solar quartz for this part of the line. I mean, the days of an automatic chronograph being affordable, I think are long gone. But Seiko is able to offer something even now that's very attractive and ticks a lot of the same boxes without, you know, sending into the poorhouse. So I think it's really, really attractive.
The one question I have is, so, you know, Speed Timer was one of their original lines, right, in Seiko's collection?
Yeah.
The thing is that they morphed it with Prospects.
Yeah.
Which is more oriented with their dive collection.
So they define Prospects as professional specifications.
Yeah, that's the meaning of the Prospects, right?
Does not necessarily mean only diving.
That's what I figured. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's most commonly diving, but it's not necessarily only diving.
Right.
So, I mean, I hear you. I see you. But we have to dismiss it, you know. yeah. Okay.
So, all which right, one would you take?
The blue dial for me.
The blue dial for me. The yeah. Sand.
Sand for you. All right. Well, either way, at least you didn't hate on it. You didn't hork on it. So
I'm not horking on it too much. I won't get it personally. But
of course not.
If you were to give me one of the three, I'll take the sand.
If you think I'm going to give you a watch you don't want, you're out of your goddamn mind.
That's exactly what I think you want to do.
Yeah, I don't think so. All right. As far as what we will be buying or would like to be buying, Sanj, what do we got?
All right.
Oh, actually, so, you know, it's my turn.
It is your How turn. I go watch you buying. So
watch you buying. All right. Watch you buying. I've got a Ball Engineer Hydrocarbon Aero GMT 2, 40 millimeters in blue for sale at Nomen Watches. And this is basically the Ball Engineer GMT version of the Rolex Sprite, black and green, bezeled. Ball's not for everybody. These are very chunky cased watches. I feel like you and I are talking a lot about GMT, so this kind of popped into my mind. I mean, I like Ball the brand. But you know, the hydrocarbon is a big boy, and I'm not sure that I could even really pull it off, but I do think it's really attractive. I don't know, Sanj, what are your thoughts? It's for sale for $2,900 at Noman Watches.
So the one thing Ball's known for is their loom and their legibility at night or in dark conditions.
It's the tritium tubes.
Yeah, and if you there's a picture that they have on Noman Watches where it is, I believe it's got the tritium tubes. But yeah. What I'm trying to say is there's a picture of it where they lit it up at night.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And it is and it's different colors too. You know, you have the five marker indices, the GMT hand's got a little green pip.
Yeah.
The tip, and you have even the bezel is fully loomed up, which is actually very useful.
Yeah, that's actually really, really smart. And I like the green and black. I mean, you know, it's becoming a more and more popular kind of flavor of GMT.
I mean, this is like a real deal. I mean, I think, yeah, the case could be a bit chunky because of the crown lock that they have.
It just looks huge. And I really don't know if I could wear this, in all honesty. I want to try it, but I think what it offers at that price, it's really compelling.
It is very compelling. It's the movement's even upgraded to COSC certified.
Yeah, it's a chronometer GMT, you know, a full-blown chronometer GMT.
And for the price, you really can't go wrong. I mean,
$2,900. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't want to compare it to a Rolex. You know, maybe this is a Tudor level. Or maybe. I don't know. I mean, even then, you know, you'll have people calling in and sending hate mail. So, you know, you can't touch those brands. But, you know, it's pretty impressive for $2,900 what you can get.
Yep.
All right, Sanj, what do you got?
So I'm sticking with this whole Seiko Mania
part of the podcast. You didn't have to do this. This was, you could have picked anything you wanted.
I could have picked anything I wanted, but I decided to keep it to the thematic topic of the episode today. Mm-hmm. And I picked the Seiko SRP G05 Presage Men's Stainless Steel Automatic Watch.
Nice.
And it's available on Amazon for $393, which is...
Wow.
Yeah, it's a really good deal.
Yeah. This is the... basically the Presage version of the, it's a non-chrono, but it's the Seiko, wasn't this like a 1964 Olympics Seiko?
Something like that, yeah.
Timer, they had a chronograph version of this watch, and then the Presage line, I believe, issued basically just a straight three-hand version, and this is that straight three-hand version, is that correct? Does this sound familiar? I feel like this is that watch.
Yeah, so it's like the Olympic special. Yeah, it actually does come in other flavors too. Like there's like a green dial, green bezel looking one, and then it's like a gilted white, gilted indices and hands and white dial and black bezel.
Got it.
But yeah, this is a pretty cool proposition. You know, it is inspired by the 1964 Crown chronograph, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Okay, gotcha.
So it is got the 4.35 caliber. It's the one to some out there, including you, Tommy. It's only water resistant to
50 meters.
Yes, it's 50 meters.
I mean, at that stage, why even bother?
Why even bother? Just put your hands up in the air, you know, when you're partially submerged in water in the bathtub, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I think it's very attractive. And for that price, you know, you can't go wrong. I don't have too much to say. It's just a three-hander, but for some people, it works.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for...
like both of us picked watches that neither of us really want to talk too much about.
I was just picking something that will fit the theme here, and it's a good deal.
Yeah, okay. All right, and the last segment of today's podcast is the Streaming Gold on the V12 Toyota Century, okay, which is put on by the Canadian auto channel on YouTube called Throttle House. One of the guys actually spent $20,000 and bought one. And he just gives a very detailed review of this very quirky Toyota. Sanj, have you heard of the Toyota Century?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was the creme de la creme for Toyota. So it was issued, you know, only in Japan you can get this. And it was basically the car of choice for, you know, multi-conglomerate CEOs and the Japanese royal family.
Yeah.
And it was the only car in Toyota's lineup, including Lexus, that had the V12. So the idea behind the Sentry was that it was focused on the passenger experience of plushness, you know, really quiet ride and really comfortable ride. So it didn't necessarily have all the gizmos as the Germans would have, but yeah. It focused on, you know, the finest of finishings. You know, you can't see it in person when you see pictures of it, but when you actually sit in the car or and feel the materials, it is really well done. It, let's just say it's like the Grand Seiko, of Toyota cars.
The interesting thing is, in the factory that produces the Century, it says it's the greatest car in the world. The guys that work on the finishes in the car, the wood finishes in the car, basically have to go to school for years. And that's the only thing they do is the wood finishes in this car. Like, they're that dedicated just to this specific line.
Exactly. And
I know you said that it's less gizmos than the Germans, but there's a lot of gizmos in this car.
Oh, no, for sure.
We're talking full, you know, there's like a full panel of buttons in the rear seat of controls of what, you know, the passenger can do. You know, it's really, really cool. I mean, we're even talking about, like, you know, remote operated curtains for privacy in the back. You know, it's very...
But if you see the fabric that was used for the curtains, right, it's this very, I think it's a very intricately put together woven curtain or something like that.
Right.
It's very Japanese thematic.
Simple, understated, but still very, very high quality.
Exactly. Like, this is the car that will last for like decades, and, you know, the curtains will still come out in the same speed and fashion, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the guy who did the video has a 20 something year old Century. And besides being, you know, the steering wheel on the wrong side, I think the car is fully functional, you know, for today's standard.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you could take it out like you just took it out of, you know, a Toyota out of the dealership somewhere. And it runs. So really impressive, definitely cool video. Not a car I was really familiar with, so I thought it was pretty cool.
No. It's so there's not many generations of the Century. I think it's only gone through like four.
Really?
Yeah, it's really very, they last a long time in that gen itself. I think just a few years ago it got upgraded. Okay. And unfortunately they had to drop the V12. It's, I think, a V8 hybrid or something like that.
Emissions. You got them. They got them. They took down the Century.
The feds got them.
It's all good, though. I think that's pretty cool that they did the hybrid anyway.
Yeah, and maybe now you can get in leather, but for the longest time, like, you could only get it in this high-quality wool for seating surfaces.
I feel like that's Toyota kind of trolling the customer a little bit.
No, that's how the Japanese like it.
Really? Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. They like the comfort of the wool, and it's less, it's way more understated than leather.
Gotcha. All right. Well, yeah, it's a cool video. Definitely check out the link. We'll put that in the show notes. And I think that's all we got for today. All right. And I think that's all we had for this week. Thanks again for joining us for another episode of the Land Jam podcast. Give us a follow on Twitter. Give us a follow on Instagram. If you like this show, please give us a good review on iTunes. Definitely helps the podcast reach new people. And until next time, thanks.